You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting on commercial stations, radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations all across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio and every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as television on both Dish Network, DirecTV, and several hundred cable systems nationwide via the Free Speech TV Network. More people watch or listen to the Tom Hartman Program on more stations and outlets than any other progressive talk show in the world. And boy, are we having fun. And taking on some serious stuff here. Sensata, The Reason Romney's Wrong for America, the headline on a brilliant piece written by Leo Girard, the international president of the United Steelworkers Union, USW.org. And I'm pleased and honored to have you back with us, Mr. Girard, President Girard. Welcome back to the program.
Mr. Girard, Leo.
Okay, Leo.
That's great to be with you.
So,
Sensata, I love your show, and I'm usually listening to it in the car, so.
Okay, well, thank you. Sensata is now owned by Bain Capital. This is a company that manufactures sensing devices for cars, basically car parts, or, you know, parts that are used to make cars. Correct me if I'm wrong on any of this. It is making hundreds of millions of dollars a year in profit, and yet still that's not enough for Bain Capital and Mitt Romney, one of Bain's major investors and its founder.
Yeah, this is a what I would call an ongoing story. Depending where you start, I actually started in 1998 when I don't know if you've seen. I assume you've seen the video that where Romney said he wasn't worried about the 47%.
Right. Oh, yeah.
In that video, he's also talking about going to China when he was, quote, in the private sector and seeing a plant where people lived 12 to a dorm and they were 24 cents an hour.
And he was so impressed by it.
And he acquired it with personal money, not Bain. That was his personal investment set up in bought by a company he had set up in Bermuda. Mm-hmm. His partner in that was a Chinese company that set up its operation in the British Virgin Islands. And after Romney had been there for 3 years, he left that business behind, and then part of Bain was consulting on how to move a plant to China. So now we get to Sensata, and Sensata, he has $8 million of Bain money in that. Bain owns 51% of Sensata. And the day that they came to the plant to tell people they acquired it is the day they told people that by the end of the year the plant would be closed. And then they brought Chinese workers over to the plant to have the American workers train the Chinese workers. And while the Chinese workers were there, they took down the American flag. And Bain has made, so far this year, almost $800 million from Sensata.
Wow.
And they're going to move these jobs in Freeport, Illinois, that pay on average about $17 an hour. They're going to move them to China, where they're going to pay workers the equivalent of 99 cents an hour.
Well, hey, it's more profit for Mitt Romney that he only has to pay 14.5% income tax on.
Yeah, and the thing is that, again, I refer back, I mean, he wallows in his own poop. I refer back to when he was running against Ted Kennedy, when he was accusing Ted Kennedy of having a trust fund, and Ted Kennedy said it's in a blind trust. Romney's position was, a blind trust is just an old ruse. Even if you got your money in a blind trust, you can tell it what to do.
Right.
Well, he should have told his blind trust not to invest in plants or companies that move jobs offshore.
Didn't he
truly, if you're creating jobs for American workers, that's what he should have done.
Yeah, didn't he suggest to his blind trust that it should loan or give his son Tag $10 million to start an investment capital firm, a vulture capital firm?
Yeah, his IRA has got about $120 million, and he's trying to set up each of his sons with $5 million. And one of his sons, I'm not sure which, has investments in a company that makes electronic voting machines.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. It's all pretty bizarre. But the bottom line here, Mitt Romney has built his career. He makes his millions. You know, he made millions, tens of millions of dollars last year. Every year, this guy makes tens of millions of dollars. And basically, I mean, he makes it the way Paris Hilton makes her money, you know, sitting around the pool on your butt waiting for the dividend check to arrive. And therefore, he's part of that special class in America who pays a maximum 15% income tax. And on top of that, hey, you know, this company's making, how much did you say Sensata is making?
Well, the story is that so far Sensata this year has made almost $800 million.
Right, but that's not enough for Mitt Romney and for Bain Capital. They wanted to make, you know, $1 billion, and so, you know, hey, if we get Chinese.
What he's done, Tom, is it's a ruse, as he called it, with his blind trust.
Right.
He set up a company or an operation in Bermuda. It invests in things like Sensata. It makes money, and the money goes into his IRA. So if you were to be able to take the maximum contribution you could make into your IRA over the last 10 years, he'd have about $600,000 in it. Right. But because he puts money in his IRA and then uses that money to invest, and he's allowed to keep the return, the story is he's now got $120 million in that.
Right, which is
and he paid 14% on 14.1 or something on his taxes last year.
Yeah, and probably considerably less than that in previous years.
And I suspect that part of the reason he doesn't want to release those tax years is that there's many instances where he made money by either closing a facility or by moving it offshore.
Yeah.
And I wasn't able to at first figure out why he was called the godfather of outsourcing until we found these investments he made in 1998 prior to preferential trade negotiations with China, prior to America encouraging China to get into the WTO. So he went there and learned how that stuff works. Then when China got access to the WTO, he then had become a consulting company to teach people how to move their jobs to China, hence making him one of the godfathers of outsourcing.
Now, you said he came back after 3 years. He didn't spend 3 years in China. He had it in.
I don't mean him personally. I mean his investments.
I see. Okay. But he did physically go to China and physically examine this factory. And as you're correct, as he points out on that tape, he was just amazed, marveled by it, and thought it was the most wonderful thing. And people are fighting to get these jobs, in fact, at that point.
The part that was laughable is when he accepted that the Chinese manager said, no, we have the barbed wire to keep people out.
Right.
These jobs are so good, people want to get in. I don't know anybody in China or anywhere else that wants working for 24 cents an hour.
Yeah. So what this tells us about Mitt Romney, we're talking with Leo Girard, the International President of the United Steelworkers, USW.org, and about this new article that he wrote for Huffington Post, Sensata, the reason Romney's wrong for America. What are the carry home lessons in your mind?
Well, the carry home lesson is that Mitt Romney has been saying that he's been in the private sector 25 years and he knows how to create jobs. The reality is he doesn't care, doesn't know how to create jobs. What he's known is how to manipulate to create wealth. He's created a lot of wealth for himself, but he hasn't done it by creating jobs.
Well, even in China,
he's cost us almost 66,000 jobs. There's one study that a professor did from one of the universities that he's bankrupted and destroyed the equivalent of 66,000 jobs.
Amazing. And in fact, I mean, you could make the joke. Yes, he knows how to create jobs in China, but the fact of the matter is, he went over there and bought a factory that was already running.
Yeah. So, and he's also, as I said, there's one plant that it was our plant, Amped, that he destroyed, and he walked off with $10 million. In that plant, the workers were told to build a stage. The fact they were on a video about it, the workers were told to build a stage, and they thought, oh, good, there's going to come with a good announcement. They came to the plant, got on the stage, and told the people they were closing the plant.
Yeah.
And then escorted them out of the plant with guards. So the worker said, you know, it's the equivalent to being asked to build our own coffin.
Yeah. And this is the Mitt Romney that is running for president of the United States that we all need to know about. Leo Girard, the International President of the United Steelworkers Union, USW.org. Leo, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. If you go to USW.org, you can see those videos I was talking about.
Great. Thank you very much.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with, we've got a new adjective for rape. I'll share that with you right after the break. Welcome back to your media support group for We the People of the United States of America. Tom Hartman here with you. And Joanne Peniston is on the line with us. She is a worker at Sensata in Bainport, Illinois. And Joanne, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So pleased to have you with us. I understand that you're one of the people who was arrested yesterday?
Yeah, I was arrested with Reverend Jesse Jackson and a few of my other coworkers.
So tell us what happened.
Well, what initially happened was I filed some charges yesterday morning with the Labor Department because I had a meeting with the police chief of Freeport and the mayor, and they relayed that they had some meetings with the corporate. Sensata Attleboro actually came to Freeport, Illinois, and they had relayed to them that if anybody stepped foot on the property that they would be arrested for trespassing.
Right.
And it's against the law. I mean, they can't threaten or intimidate me or my coworkers from, you know, protesting.
Mm-hmm. So you were arrested for trespassing. This is and by the way, check out Bainport.com is the website for all our listeners who want to know more about this. The backstory here, we were talking with Leo Girard about this before the break, but let's revisit this once more. You were working at Bainport at Sensata.
I still work there.
You still work there. And Bain Capital bought your company, which was a very profitable company. It showed several hundred million dollars in profits. Even this year, they bought this very profitable company and decided to do what?
Ship the jobs to China.
And the machines, right?
Yes, and the machines.
Yeah. So, and did you have to train your Chinese replacements?
Yes, I did.
What was that like?
Well, I mean, it was difficult. I mean, it's hard to train any replacement for your
right.
job, whether they're American or Chinese. But with the Chinese people, it was a lot that they're not used to taking direction from women.
Mm-hmm.
There was a language barrier there. They did hire a translator, but the guys would never use them.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the times, like a few times, the guys were in screens on the computer that I hadn't seen in 6 years of running a machine.
Huh. Interesting. And is it true that when the Chinese who were going to do your job only in China, once Mitt Romney's Bain Capital moves all that equipment over to China within the next 2 weeks, is it true that when these Chinese came over to learn this, how to run this machinery, that the American flag was taken down in front of the factory?
Yes, that is true.
I don't understand why, you know, this isn't, you know, lowering the American flag when the Chinese workers show up. I don't understand why Sean Hannity isn't all over that.
They didn't even, I mean, they completely took it down. It wasn't even on the flagpole. And actually, the story that somebody tried to tell us from management last week was that the rope broke.
Right.
And you know, like, I could see if it was like a few days or whatever, but we're talking about a couple of months here. So I don't know how long it takes to replace a rope for a flagpole, but I'm pretty
right.
sure it doesn't take a few months. And it just so happened that the flag went back up after the Chinese workers left.
Oh, just by coincidence?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, of course. Joanne Peniston, one of the Sensata workers who was arrested yesterday at Bainport in Freeport, Illinois, at Bainport.com is the website. This is the protest site set up, the occupation site, as it were, across the street from the Bain's newly acquired Sensata factory, which they are in the process of dismantling and shipping the parts off to China. When Bain came in and took over the company, how long had you been working there?
6 years. Oh, 5 years.
5 years. And these are reasonably paying jobs, right? These are good.
Yes.
Yeah. And so what did you expect? What did you hear was going to happen when Bain took over the company?
Well, I mean, they announced in October of 2010 that Sensata had bought the company.
That Bain had bought
January
Sensata.
January is when we would actually be Sensata employees.
Oh, so first Sensata bought it from, what was it, Raytheon?
No, Honeywell.
Honeywell, thank you. And then Bain bought Sensata when?
Well, Bain bought Sensata back in 2006.
Oh, I see. So Bain owned Sensata, took the plant over from Raytheon.
Correct.
And then they said to you what 2 years ago? Did they tell you that they're going to ship the jobs to China, or did that come more recently?
No, the first day that we were actually Sensata employees, they said over the next 2 years we will transition all the jobs to China.
Wow.
It wasn't until about May that Tom Gallrap and I and a few of our other coworkers got together, and we kind of got the connection from to Bain Capital. So that's how this all came about. You know, yeah, we knew years ago, but like, you know, nobody's happy that their job was going to China.
So Bain owned Sensata, which, you know, took over this factory and said, we're going to ship the jobs to China. But when they took over the factory, nobody told you it was Bain?
Right.
They were hiding it?
I mean, I don't know if they were hiding it. It just was never openly said.
So how did you learn that it was actually Bain Capital that, you know, Sensata was a front corporation for or a wholly owned piece of?
Tom Gallrap, my coworker, actually figured it out, and we kind of got together, a few of us, and had some meetings and discussed it and discussed what we were going to do.
Right. Has there been any response? I know that you people have appealed to both Bain Capital and Mitt Romney, the founder of Bain Capital and one of the major stockholders of Bain Capital, a guy who makes millions every year. This year, right now, he's probably making, you know, last year he was making about $90,000 a day. He's probably making about the same right now from Bain Capital. Have you had, you've appealed to them to keep your jobs, keep these good paying jobs here in the United States. Have you heard anything in response to that?
Yeah, they actually said that, to talk to the president of the United States because he owns stock in Sensata. They pushed it back on the president.
So talk to Mr. Obama. They literally said that to you.
Yeah, the Romney campaign. That's the release they released the president.
That is amazing. Joanne Penniston, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bainport.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
This is truly horrific. I don't know another word for it. It's horrific, this whole story.
Well, we're living here in Allentown, and they're closing all the factories down. Out in Bethlehem, they're killing time, filling up forms, standing in line.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Republican men seem to be quite obsessed with the issue of rape. Let's see, we had forcible rape, like as in, you can't get contraception unless you can prove that your rape was forcible. You can't get the morning after pill that would prevent a pregnancy, an implantation in the uterus, arguably prevent a pregnancy from happening. You can't get that, sorry. Then we had legitimate rape. And, well, actually, we've got there's the Republican Party rape advisory chart over at Alternet right now. I would note to whoever put this thing together, they've got the Republican logo on there. They've got the elephant with the three stars. They have the stars turned right side up. The Republican Party has actually turned the stars, the American flag stars, upside down from the right side up star, where, you know, the top, it's like Da Vinci's Man, you know, it's the you got a point on the top, it's the head, you got 2 points on the side, which are the arms, you got 2 points on the bottom, which are the legs. You flip it upside down, and it's the satanic star, which is the one that the Republican Party is using right now, where you've got two spikes at the top, the horns, two spikes on the side, the ears, and one spike on the bottom, the little chinny chin chin of the goat. But in any case, Mark Carlin actually coined this phrase over a buzz flash this morning. Divine rape. This is what Mr. Moorcock in Indiana, the Republican, who, by the way, Josh Mandel, the guy running against Sherrod Brown in Ohio for the United States Senate, has embraced. Josh Mandel, he says, this is after Murdoch said what he said yesterday, which is that basically if you get raped and you get pregnant, that's God's will, and you should not have the right to abort that baby. Let me rephrase that. To abort that, at that point, cluster of 2, 4, 6, 8, 16, 32 cells, whatever it may be, in the first few hours or days before it has even implanted itself in the uterus while it's still floating down the fallopian tubes. He said, no, you can't do that. Are we going to start sending police to women's houses when they get raped to make sure that they don't take birth control pills? I'm dead serious about this because, you know, an overdose of birth control pills basically is what the morning after pill is. It's a high dose of hormones. And are we going to, like, cops in their bedrooms, cops in their bathrooms? Hey, quick, I want a urine sample. Are you pregnant? I mean, at what, in any case, Mandel, Josh Mandel in Ohio, he says Moorcock, he backs him to the hilt. He says, listen, I've gotten to know Richard Moorcock because we're both state, Freudian slip, because we're both state treasurers and we're treasurers in states next door to each other. He's a gentleman, he's a class act, he's a thoughtful guy, he'll make a great United States senator. Now, this is said after Mr. Moorcock said this. You got you don't have the clip. Okay. Okay, here we go. This is the short. Sure. Bring it up.
Life is that gift from God, and I think even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, that it is something that God intended to happen.
Now, State Representative Paul Ryan, when he was a member of Congress, wrote an op-ed that was originally published by the Heritage Foundation titled, "The Cause of Life Can't Be Severed from the Cause of Freedom." He opposes the morning after pill for rape victims because he says, hey, the cause of life is irrelevant. It's life. Now, I realize there are some people who genuinely, you know, have a heartfelt religious conviction of that, and some even arguably a biological conviction of that. But that's not the law in the United States right now. But that's how they want to make it the law in the United States. So Paul Ryan, Josh Mandel, Mr. Moorcock, I mean, just the list goes on and on of all these Republican men. So here we have this chart. Gift from God rape, of course, Richard Moorcock said that. You just heard that clip. And then Rick Santorum said the right approach is to accept this horribly created in the sense of rape, but nonetheless a gift of human life and accept what God's giving to you. So you had Rick Santorum saying that, you know, God is directing rapists, I guess, too, or at least the pregnancy that results from rapists. Republican Senator John Cornyn of Texas, he said, Richard and I, along with millions of Americans, believe that life is a gift from God. Okay. And you got legitimate rape. As Todd Akin said on August 20th of this year, if it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to shut that whole thing down. So that's, we go from red to orange to yellow. Honest rape, Republican congressman and presidential candidate Ron Paul, he said, if it's an honest rape, that individual should go immediately into an emergency room. I'd give him a shot of estrogen. So Ron Paul says, okay, let's prevent implantation. Emergency rape, I said this was men. This is actually Linda McMahon, Republican Senate candidate in Connecticut. She's also confusing churches with hospitals. She said, it was really an issue about a Catholic church being forced to offer these pills if a person came in for an emergency rape. Okay. Easy rape. This was an interesting one. This is a guy who was endorsed by vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan. His name is Roger Rivard, a Republican state representative in Wisconsin. He said, if you go down that road, some girls, they rape so easy. Yes, that's what he said. The guy endorsed by Paul Ryan, Richard Rivard, State Representative Richard Rivard in Wisconsin. And then, of course, forcible rape. Former vice presidential nominee Paul Ryan told Todd legitimate rape Akin and 214 other Republicans co-sponsored the, quote, No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act, end quote, which would prohibit federal funding of abortions except in instances of an act of forcible rape. So you got to prove forcible. And then the bonus here from this piece on by Bruce Wilson over at, in fact, it was originally published at talktoaction.org. Enjoyable rape. This is the bonus. If it's inevitable, just relax and enjoy it. Clayton Williams, who was running for the governor of Texas back in 1990, that kind of blew up his campaign. My recollection is Ann Richardson ended up walking away with that after he said that. So it's really quite remarkable. Now, that is one interesting story. Here's another one. In Greece, this is in today's New York Times. Liz Alderman writing about this in today's New York Times. She talks about how the head of Greece's largest oncology department, oncology is the field of treating cancer, Dr. Kostas Sirigios, thought he'd seen everything. I'm reading from the first two paragraphs here of the New York Times article today, a couple of sentences. But nothing prepared him for Alina, an unemployed woman whose breast cancer had been diagnosed a year before she came to him. By the time she came to him, her cancer had grown to the size of an orange and broken through the skin, leaving a wound that she was draining with paper napkins. Dr. Sirigios said, when we saw her here, we were speechless. Everyone was crying. Things like that are described in textbooks, but you never see them, because until now, anybody got sick in this country could always get help. Now, what's he talking about? What he's talking about is that after Goldman Sachs conspired with the government of Greece some years back to loan them enough money that they could make it look like their debt ratio was lower than it actually was, because the Goldman Sachs was going to give them cash, and then they would give Goldman Sachs this a form of debt that could be basically hidden. And the reason why the Greeks wanted to do this, or at least the Greek government at that time, was so they could become part of the European Union, and they had to have a debt that was less than 3%. And so they, to get down below that threshold, they did this arguably, if not illegally, certainly deceptive little thing with Goldman Sachs. So then, you know, when the worldwide collapse happened on George W. Bush's watch as a consequence of Phil Graham, Republican Senator Phil Graham's deregulation, Graham-Leach-Bliley and the Commodity Futures Modernization Act, the crashing of the world markets by the banksters on Wall Street. When that happened, Greece found themselves unable to pay back the banksters. So the banksters said, okay, we will loan you money, and members of the European Union, we will loan you money, but what you have to do is change the rules of your health care plan. Used to be, if you lived in Greece, you automatically had health care, national health care plan. Everybody was covered. Now you've got to say to people, excuse me, you have to say to people who are unemployed, if you are unemployed, sorry, you don't get health insurance. You have to pay. You can't even buy health insurance. You have to pay all your health care expenses out of pocket. So Alina was unemployed, and so her cancer grew to the size of an orange and broke through the skin because she had no health insurance, because that was the deal that Greece made with the banksters. And what this oncologist, what this doctor points out in this brilliant article in today's New York Times, is that Greece tragically, disastrously, is now becoming like the United States. And Romney wants to repeal Obamacare?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
You know, 45,000 people in the United States every year die under circumstances like this. The Greeks are just horrified. They've never seen something like this. Not in modern lifetimes. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Here's the quote. This is Dr. Sirigios in today's New York Times. This Greek doctor, this Greek oncologist, this Greek cancer specialist, looking at this woman who's got a breast cancer the size of an orange that has broken through her skin. She is dying of it. It was diagnosed a year ago. Nothing has been done. Why? Because she's unemployed. And under the new rules that Greece had to agree to with the banksters, they had to take that money that they were using to fund their national health insurance program for unemployed people and give it to the banksters to pay back the loans that they used to get into the EU. Here's what he said. This doctor said on the record to the New York Times, we are moving to the same situation that the United States has been in, where when you lose your job and you are uninsured, you aren't covered. When cancer is diagnosed among the uninsured, He said, quote, the system simply ignores them. They can't access chemotherapy, surgery, or even simple drugs, end quote. Unless, of course, you know, like Mitt Romney, they were born as millionaires and made billions by shipping jobs offshore and buying factories and squeezing the life out of them, essentially. I mean, this is David Stockman has been a guest on this program a number of times over the years. In fact, in the early years of this program, back in 2003, 2004, when we started this program, David Stockman would come on and we would argue economics. And then he pretty much stopped arguing. And you know, he got it. I mean, you know, David Stockman was Ronald Reagan's budget director. He was the head of the Office of Management and Budget, the OMB, as I recall. And, yeah, he was from 81 to 85. So he was the guy who put together the budget. And he was the guy who actually came out to the press and said, yeah, you know, it's basically if the rich get rich, it'll trickle down to the average person. And he shouldn't have said that out loud. Reagan took him to the woodshed was the phrase he used later. But David Stockman has been a good Republican his whole entire life. As far as I know, he still is. At least he still was the last time I talked to him, as I recall, a number of years ago. Here's what he had to say recently, like, you know, in the last couple of days. There is not I don't have a date on this, but it's over at DU. Mitt Romney was not a businessman. Says David Stockman, Ronald Reagan's director of the Office of Management and Budget. Mitt Romney was not a businessman. He was a master financial speculator who bought, sold, flipped, and stripped businesses. He did not build enterprises the old-fashioned way out of inspiration, perspiration, and a long slog in the free market, fostering a new product, service, or process of production. Instead, he spent his 15 years raising debt in prodigious amounts on Wall Street, so the Bain could purchase the pots and pans and cast-offs of corporate America, leverage them to the hilt, gussy them up as reborn roll-ups, and then deliver them back to Wall Street for resale, the faster the better. Mr. Romney, who at one point, repeatedly, so the first thing he's going to do today, or the first thing he's going to do if he becomes president, is to roll back Obamacare. In Greece today, this is what another doctor, these doctors, they're creating these underground clinics where they will work after their normal hours, they're working for free to treat the unemployed. This is the Republican idea of how it's supposed to work, right? Charity begins at home. It should be us helping each other out. So the Greek doctors are actually doing that. They're getting together and they're creating these clinics, but it's burning them out. It's devastating their lives. It's hurting their practices. But in any case, this one doctor says, in Greece today, you have to make a contract with yourself that you will not get very sick. This is resistance, he added, sweeping his eyes over the volunteers and patients bustling around the clinic. It is a nation, a people allowed to stand on their own 2 feet again with the help they give each other. He said, you know, this crisis has brought us together. I guess that's, you know, making a lemon or lemonade out of lemons. But the reality is that Greece is now becoming like the United States. Meanwhile, 11 states will give voters an opportunity to change state tax policy on Election Day. Guest Blocker writes over at thinkprogress.org. The TABOR, the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, so-called laws, Florida voters are going to have an opportunity. Basically, what it says is that it takes, if you want to do away with the loopholes that people like Mitt Romney use, the capital gains loophole, for example, that allows him to pay 14% income tax, which is something a surgeon can't do. Something somebody works for a living can't do. Because if you actually get a paycheck, your top income tax rate is 35%. But if you're a bankster, or if you're Paris Hilton, 15%, because you get this loophole, this capital gains loophole. This Taxpayer Bill of Rights, so-called, would say to the states that if you want to reduce any of the loopholes for the rich or for the corporations, so that they end up paying more taxes, You may only close those loopholes with a two-thirds supermajority, a two-thirds majority in both the House and Senate, or the Assembly and Senate, or whatever you are, the, you know, whatever you call it in your particular state. A supermajority, a two-thirds majority. And given the fact that the Republican Party in America is wholly sold out, I mean, this is why Olympia Snowe is leaving, in my opinion, leaving the Republican Party. It's why Richard Lugar got kicked out of the Republican Party. Because if you want to be a Republican these days and actually be rational and sane, they will get rid of you. The Republican Party is 100% wholly owned by the Koch brothers and their buddies, by the Tea Party, by the Grover Norquists, the K Street, the multimillionaire K Street lobbyists, and the billionaire Wall Street speculators and oil barons. That's the Republican Party. And if you think that you're going to get any Republicans to join with Democrats to create that two-thirds supermajority necessary to close the tax loopholes on the billionaires and on the corporations, good luck. This is one of the big problems California has right now. They bought this, they drank this Kool-Aid 2 years ago.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And at some point today, we are going to send off Stamps.com postage, a copy of an autographed copy of Unequal Protection, How Corporations Became People and How You Can Fight Back, my book on how corporations became people and how you can fight back, to the caller that Shane thinks is the coolest caller. So, or whatever. You know, he may not think they're the coolest caller, but the caller that Shane has flipped a coin. Do you play marbles? Do you? Yeah, all of the above. Okay. Random number generator. There you go. Okay. You need to know this. Besides trying to elect one of their own, Mitt Romney, to the White House, the oligarchs have another trick up their sleeve this election. And that's to make sure that their state taxes never go up again and the loopholes that they have stay forever. Their plan is carried out in the form of ballot measures, often under the names of things like the Taxpayer Bill of Rights Laws, TABOR, that will appear on a handful of states on election day that are aimed at making it very difficult for state legislatures to raise taxes. Such measures are on the ballot in states like Florida, Michigan, and Washington. So imagine a law, just think about this for a minute, or even more bizarre than a law, an amendment to a state's constitution that says in plain language, you may not take away any tax breaks that billionaires or large corporations have without it getting at least a two-thirds vote in the legislature. But you may lay off teachers, state troopers, repeal Meal on Wheels programs, cut off financial aid to colleges and college students with a simple majority of legislators. Think people would vote for that? And then imagine that the law went a step further and said, you can't raise taxes on billionaires or corporations, and you can't close any of the tax loopholes they use every day, but you can easily raise fees on everyday working people so they're paying more to register their cars or park on city streets or have their garbage collected. Sounds crazy, right? That's exactly what California passed 2 years ago. What has already happened in states from Oregon to Colorado to Delaware, and may soon happen this election day in Florida, Michigan, and Washington State. And while people voting for these laws or constitutional amendments nearly always passed as ballot measures with highly deceptive advertising, while people think they're voting to keep their own taxes low, the real effect is to keep intact tax breaks and loopholes for the rich and the corporations while simultaneously wiping out the ability of the state to deal with an economic downturn. Basically, billionaires are protected, but unemployed people are screwed. Because when there's an economic downturn, the state can't spend any more money to help unemployed people get over the hump, because to do so would mean the state would have to, even temporarily, close the tax loopholes that are used by corporations and the super rich. And, of course, the corporations and the super rich scream, that's increasing taxes. That's unconstitutional. You can't do that without a supermajority. Remember, every state in the union except Vermont constitutionally requires a balanced budget. It's always so hysterical to me when I hear people like, you know, Rick Perry and Mitt Romney and these former governors, Scott Walker. I balance the budget every year. Yeah, right. Your constitution requires that. So the only, so what do you do when the only way to balance your budget, when you have to increase spending because of a recession and people are on unemployment, you know, and you got state unemployment funds, so you've got to increase spending. What do you do other than close tax loopholes on the rich of the corporations? Well, you can't do much other than cut services to everybody else. And given that the Republican Party has become wholly the party of the billionaires and the big corporations, they're never going to go along with Democrats on closing even a dollar in tax loopholes for billionaires. According to the U.S. Department of Labor, when a state is handcuffed from raising taxes or cutting loopholes for the rich and corporations to help out unemployed people, that state can't respond to an economic downturn, and therefore the downturn becomes an unemployment spiral. And if you look at the states where this has happened, where these laws have passed, state after state after state, that's exactly what's happened over the last 4 years. What's happening here is that billionaires and transnational corporations are sucking our states dry. The welfare they collect, rich people collect, people like Mitt Romney, the welfare that he collects in the form of his capital gains loophole, for example, among other things. I mean, there's actual cash payments that the governor, that our federal government makes to companies that are owned by Bain Capital that end up in Mitt Romney's paycheck, too. The welfare that is collected in the form of special tax breaks and outright payments is more than twice all the money spent on welfare for poor people in the United States. And rich people want to keep it that way, which is why they push so hard for these so-called taxpayer Bill of Rights laws to be in place to protect billionaire and corporate special interest taxpayers. If this was really just about taxes, these laws are totally unnecessary. I mean, you look at the last 30 years of money collected in the states. You compare the states with and without these laws. Basically, there's virtually no difference in the money funding the state, the total money coming in. So what difference does the law make? Well, it's pretty straightforward. In those states that protect giant tax loopholes for corporations and the rich with these Tabor laws, these taxpayer Bill of Rights laws, what goes up to compensate for lower taxes are fees that are paid by average working people. For example, when Mitt Romney was governor of Massachusetts, in order to avoid cutting his own capital gains tax loophole that lets him, as a bankster, pay less than half the tax rate of doctors and lawyers in his state, Romney proposed a rather bizarre list that was compiled by Andrew Kaczynski over at BuzzFeed. A fee on the blind. Yes, you heard that right. Mitt Romney proposed, as governor of Massachusetts, a fee that only blind people would have to pay. He proposed a $100 fee on the mentally handicapped. Yes, seriously. He proposed, it got struck down by the legislature. The Democratic legislature, he likes to talk about how they all loved each other. Not so much. In fact, he issued over 700 vetoes while he was governor. In any case, he proposed a $400 fee on anyone who had become sick with tuberculosis. Oh, you got TB, $400. He proposed a $100 biannual fee on EMTs and first responders. If you want to flash red lights to get through traffic, you got to pay up. While this didn't pass, Romney did double the fees for both an EMT certificate and the fee you have to pay if your ambulance is equipped with basic life support equipment. He increased hourly group skating fees at ice rinks across the state. Keep in mind, all of this so that he doesn't have to raise his own taxes, so he can keep intact the tax loophole, the capital gains tax loophole that he enjoys. He was behind a fee on working class barbers and hairdressers, increasing how much it costs to get a haircutting license. Romney also increased the licensing fees for nurses, plumbers, home inspectors, funeral directors, and auto mechanics. He doubled the fee for if you want to legally change your name. It's all about increasing fees on working people to protect tax loopholes for rich people like Mitt Romney. For a state with a supermajority requirement seeking to balance its budget, it is legislatively easier to repeal a Meals on Wheel program, lay off state troopers or kindergarten teachers, cut health care services for seniors, or cut college financial aid than to close a corporate tax loophole. That's the other scam being run in this election, and I just figured you should know about it. I mean, it really is pretty startling what's going on. School spending in California, ever since they passed this law, has dropped dramatically. Why? Because, hey, you can't raise taxes to pay for it. And the governor of California is not about raising fees like Mitt Romney was. So, hey, we're running out of money. Can't raise taxes on rich people. Can't close loopholes on rich people. Can't close loopholes on big corporations. You look at this, you look at Sensata, this factory that is the, you know, the Bain Capital owns that is being closed down. Bainport.com is the website for this in Freeport, Illinois. You look at the history of the Republican Party from, you know, the newest thing that they've brought us, divine rape, along with forcible and legitimate, all these other, yeah, right. And you just have to wonder, how is it that even maybe half of Americans might think about voting for a Republican?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I mean, serious question here. Are we really that stupid? Or is it that advertising's really that effective?
I'll show you just how cool scientists are. We study everything, that's why we're cool. And yes, most of us got high marks in school.
Geek.
And proud.
Geeky science, our 3 minutes a week, second hour of every Thursday, where I get to talk about science for a couple of minutes. This is a really interesting story. It's published in Psychology Today. The headline is, Your Dog Watches You and Interprets Your Behavior. Yes, animals learn our behavior, mimic our behavior, and not just our behavior. I mean, in this case, they're talking about dogs and social referencing. Our cat Higgins, when he was a kitten, was owned by a bunch of jocks in a dormitory or a fraternity house. I never get exactly straight who it was. Our son rescued him, and he was locked in the bathroom with a pit bull. And Higgins, first of all, because he was locked in the bathroom and wasn't fed or given anything to drink, to this day, and Higgins is now like 13, 14 years old, he's getting to be an old cat, to this day, you open a bathroom door, and Higgins will run into the shower and stand underneath the shower head with his mouth open waiting for a drip. Because that's literally how he survived as a little cat. As a kitten. And then, you know, when we first got him, when Justin first brought him over, we had to keep him we gave him food and water and kitty litter, but we had to keep him in a separate bedroom because when we walked into the room, we had to wear leather gloves. He would attack us. He'd run across the room and leap at us because he thought he was a pit bull. Whenever anybody would ring the doorbell, he would run to the front door and wag his tail and growl. Louise, one time there was a plumber who was working on the kitchen sink, and Higgins jumped up on the sink. He was underneath the sink, you know, and Higgins jumped up on the sink and went flying. Louise caught him in midair as he was heading to wrap his all four claws and paws around this plumber's face, which is, you know, was Higgins' favorite thing to do. Just take down that person. So, gee, you know, in a way it's like, this is the new science. Mammals learn. But I'd say, hey, it's pretty obvious stuff. By the way, Higgins, to this day, the other day, Louise made pizza. And Higgins was like knocking things over to get to it. You have pizza or potato chips. He will, if you bring potato chips into the house, he will tear the bag open to get to them. If there's the smallest crack in that bag, if you have opened that bag so that he could smell that there's potato chips in it, he will tear it open to get at them. Because that's what he lived on, pizza and potato chips. And water out of the shower. So, gee, we learn, animals learn. You saw the story about the whale. One of this aquarium, there was this whale that actually was making sounds that sounded like humans talking to each other. I thought that was fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So, anyway, Cindy, in Watervliet, Michigan.
Michigan.
Hey, Cindy, what's on your mind?
And there's a Watervliet actually in New York State as well.
Uh-huh.
Same type of area, resort area by the lake,
mm-hmm.
in southwest Michigan. And thank you for talking about David Stockman, because he used to be my congressman
before
he got into the White House.
That's right.
His family and all the people in his family are still very active in the Republican Party. Here, and he needs to work with his protege, Fred Upton, who's the head of the Commerce and Energy Committee in the House.
Yeah.
because he has not gone the way that David Stockman has. He's still doing the same things and saying
Fred's still
the same
crazy.
Things.
In fact, Fred Upton believes that climate change is a hoax.
He didn't used to, but he does now.
Yeah.
What I had wanted to talk about was you had talked to a woman, I believe, that was working at the Freeport plant.
Right.
That's being taken over by Bain or had been taken over by Bain.
Right.
And this is the new technique, I think, because she had said that she was told by the Romney campaign when she complained about what they were doing, she must have called their office or something to complain. And they said, complain to President Obama because he has investments in this company.
Right.
And this is what happened at the second debate. Was when Romney tried to challenge President Obama, have you looked at your investments? Have you looked at your investments?
Right.
So what they're doing is trying to paint us all who have 401ks, pensions, you know, any kind of investment where you have a small, minute amount
right.
of money.
If you, buy like one of these Fidelity funds or
and they
Lipper.
Do the investing.
Right. Right.
You know, and it's usually not very much. Most people don't have a ton of money invested. But he's going to try to make it sound like if you have a little, it's the same as me who has a lot.
Right, as
and
Mitt Romney.
It's the
yeah.
same as me who had run the company,
right.
who told them what to do, who set the tone for this company.
Yep. Yeah, it is the old false equivalence trick. Cindy, thank you very much for the call and pointing that out. Very, very well said. Victor in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hey, Victor, what's up?
Yeah, I've got a question as to why the Obama campaign isn't putting out ads or commercials about Sensata, and I don't know if you've heard the Delphi story recently,
yeah.
and the election, that be blind to the fact that electronic cheating has been done in the past, and it's easy. To do. I've done computers for 40 years. If I can hide source code, I can do whatever I want.
Sure.
And why aren't they responding to that?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I think this is low-hanging fruit. The electronic voting machines, I understand the Democratic Party's rationale. I totally disagree with it. But their rationalization is if people don't think that the voting machines are, you know, have integrity, if they don't think that their vote is going to be counted, then why bother voting? And they're just scared to death that people won't show up to vote. And that's a legitimate fear. But I think that, okay, fine. If that's your concern, then don't talk about the electronic voting machines until election day. And then you got 2 years to raise hell about it and do something about it. Get them fixed. But frankly, it should be not in the context of, hey, there may be fraud in the voting machines. Although the other day I saw a headline on one of the right-wing sites, I think it might have been Drudge, about how they thought that maybe the Democrats had learned how to hack voting machines. Now, that's, you know, the Democratic Party, what they should be doing is issuing, Victor, thank you for the call, they should be issuing official denials. Well, yes, there are hackers who are Democrats and progressives, Anonymous, and groups like that, who do know how to hack voting machines, but we would never recommend that they, you know, that. Right.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
When they start doing that and talking like that, then all of a sudden Republicans are going to sit up and take notice.
Huh? Really?
Welcome back. Ah, Cat Scratch. Oh, it's Higgins. With Guccellini, yes, my cat Higgins trying to take on the goose that was living on our back porch when we lived in Portland in the floating home. Amazing. Amazing. Jason in Arlington, Virginia. Hey, Jason, thanks for calling into the program. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Hey, I just wanted to comment that until we get the integrity of the voting system down, it doesn't matter who wins the election. There's always going to be a percentage that unfortunately is going to doubt the process itself and the integrity.
Right.
So there has to be some sort of concerted effort on both sides to fix this in some way, shape, or form, because
it's deprivatizing.
No matter what happens.
Take it out of private hands, put it into public hands, make the software open source, let everybody see what's going on, make the entire process completely transparent. This is literally to quote Bev Harris, black box voting. It's like, you know, somebody touches the screen and then the machine goes and then it spits out the results and we're supposed to trust that. And
right,
I, you know, frankly, I don't.
No, I'm in agreement with you. And I, you know, it's funny. You would think that after the Bush-Gore, there would be every effort, you know, from both sides to, you know, improve the integrity. And that's the big thing about it. Unless people have faith in the system itself, then the legitimacy of who's in power will always be in question, which undermines the system.
Sure. Well, this was the scam that happened was, you know, during Bush-Gore, there were those butterfly ballots down in Florida, and that was a punch card system. That were ultimately tabulated by machines, by the way, but nonetheless, there was a punch card system, and the way it was put together in some counties, you know, there were all these people who were voting, thinking they were voting for Al Gore, and in fact, they were voting for Pat Buchanan. And so, you know, the solution in the minds of the Republicans was the Help America Vote Act, passed in 2002, which transferred over $5 billion to the states to buy electronic voting machines so there'd never again be a problem, other than...
Yeah, I mean,
you know, gee, you push the Gore button and up comes Bush's name, really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just so surprised. I mean, just today, Jim Moran in the congressional district in Arlington, Virginia, his son had to resign because the Democrats' son was caught on tape talking about how to do voter fraud.
Yeah.
And then there was Wendy Rosen over in Maryland who was caught, she's running for Congress, voting for both the state of Maryland and the state of Florida. So, when I sit there, it's both sides are involved in this.
Not true.
I realize that. Well,
Jason, not true.
It's really simple,
Jason. You got to wonder how much these guys get paid to try and get on a talk show and talk about this stuff. There are a couple. There will be voter fraud. We had, 20 prosecutions of it? No, 13 prosecutions of it last year. I'm not concerned, frankly, about voter fraud. It is so rare. George Bush spent $70 million looking for voter fraud. He had secretaries, or excuse me, federal prosecutors who resigned because he was demanding that they find people who were voting fraudulently, and they couldn't find them. And they were like, there's real crimes out here. He's like, well, you want to do political prosecutions? Out. So, yeah, you can give me a couple of anecdotes. And what I'll give you is Catherine Harris knocking 60,000 to 80,000 African-Americans off the voting rolls in Florida before the 2000 election. Voter fraud. Paul Weyrich was totally upfront about this. The guy who founded the American Legislative Council, co-founded the Heritage Foundation, the grand old man of the modern Republican Party who ran the direct mail operation for Ronald Reagan during his campaign in 1980, Paul Weyrich was actually upfront about it. Now, I don't think he realized he was being videotaped, but it's there for you to see. I mean, go to YouTube. You can watch it yourself in the quiet of your own home, or you can watch it or listen to it here. Paul Weyrich said to a group of Republican activists who were meeting in a church in Dallas, Texas in 1980, the following.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
So, I absolutely love it. A right-wing guest, a guest who's been on our program a couple of times, a conservative that I was debating, actually mentioned the other day to I believe it was to Sean, our booker, our executive director, that every time he came on, he got paid. I'm like, really? I know of no analog to that in the left-wing world. I go on Fox News, nobody pays me. But apparently in the right-wing world, it's like you can make money calling into talk shows, you can make money. So, I love it when these guys, these shills, call into the program and... Oh, let me tell you about this guy who's a Democrat who got caught instructing people in how to do election fraud. And you're not going to look at 60 to 80,000 African Americans knocked off the voting rolls in Florida by Catherine Harris. That's just gone down the memory hole. The way that Jeb Bush stole an election, a national election, gave it to his brother. At least got it close enough that the Supreme Court could steal it. Are you seriously going to tell me that? You're all hysterical about this. You want to put up big signs in African-American communities saying, if you don't vote right, if you make a mistake, you might go to prison. I think this is one of the biggest tragedies, frankly, in America today. That you've got billionaires, I'm serious, billionaires, who get it that the party that they own, the Republican Party, can only win elections if they can prevent the majority of the people from voting, or if they can prevent a significant slice, a significant minority of the people from voting. That there's no way that if they were telling the truth about their agenda, that their agenda is all about making more money for billionaires, keeping the tax loopholes in place for people like Mitt Romney so he can use the capital gains deduction loophole and only pay a maximum 15% income tax. And he defended it on 60 Minutes. If they were to just come right out and say, okay, here's our agenda. The agenda of the Republican Party is to screw the working person and to make the rich people richer. And if you don't believe that that's our agenda, look at the last 30 years of Reaganomics. The wealth at the top 1% has gone up 275%, and the wealth of average Americans has dropped. Now, Romney will point that out to you. He'll blame it on Obama. But it's a 30-year trend. It started with Ronald Reagan. If they actually came out and said the truth about their agenda, which is not hard to find. I mean, just look at Paul Ryan's budget. Cut taxes on millionaires and billionaires, cut services, cut the bootstraps out from the rest of us who might want to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. If they were to actually say that, they'd never win an election. And enough people have figured that out, and they know that enough people have figured it out, that they're having to run around with their hair on fire and actually, you know, pay people to call into radio shows and say, oh, there's this guy I read about on this right-wing website who is encouraging somebody to fill out a voter registration form fraudulently or what. Frankly, I don't know the details. I've not seen the story. I seriously have not seen the story. I don't live in the right-wing websites. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if there are a few people out there who commit crimes. I want them busted and prosecuted. If they're scamming our electoral system, of course. But I'd like them to share a jail cell with Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush. Because, you know, one person saying, oh, yeah, here's how you vote. Here's how you fill it out. Here's how you phony up an electric bill or something so that you can vote. Because you don't, have enough money to buy electricity. I don't know the details of this. I've heard this is twice now. I heard it last night on the TV show. Some, you know, right-wing guest was going off on it, and then this guy calls in. But it's like, so what? Throw them in jail. Right? We actually prosecute people for this. 8, 10, 12, 14 times a year nationwide. But you're going to say that the trade-off for this, that the few people who are voting when they shouldn't be, is to knock 5 million people off the voter rolls, which is what was what the Republican Party tried very, very hard to do this year. And they probably will have succeeded in knocking at least 3 million people off the voting rolls. Legitimate voters. And then you want to intimidate millions more? Threaten them? Scare them? Confuse them? Oh, the election date, you know, on this one website in Spanish was November 8th. In English, it was November 6th. Right. Hispanics vote for who? This is un-American. I'd say to the caller who called in earlier, you know, if you're a true believer and you really believe this stuff, you're a sucker. And that's just a sad, tragic, pathetic thing. I mean, if you really believe that the billionaires who are hustling this stuff, the people, you know, Rupert Murdoch and Roger Ailes, the guys who are shoveling this stuff to you in Fox News, if you really believe this stuff, that's so sad. And on the other hand, you know, if you are just a paid shill, well, you know, I get it. Sometimes we got to do distasteful things to make a living. It's a tough economy. 30 years of Reaganomics has ripped this country apart. So, you know, I guess I forgive you. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
You know, if you stick with the Republican Party long enough and it gets infiltrated by the Libertarians enough, gee, you could make a living as a hooker. Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Nancy in Madison, New Jersey. Hey, Nancy, what's on your mind today?
Hi, I love your show.
Thank you.
I just sort of had a thought today. I don't know if anybody's addressed this idea, but I was wondering if Romney wants to double the budget of the military because he wants to privatize the Army and thus creating more jobs.
Right. Well, you know, this is something that this is basically what Reagan did. I mean, he spent $1 trillion on Star Wars, and it was a stimulus to the economy. Now, he borrowed it all, but it still stimulated the economy and got us out of the worst recession since the Great Depression at that point in time. So it could be. You know, it's not inconceivable. It's not inconceivable, Nancy. Thanks for the call and for the idea. Mike in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom, what's going on?
I'm here.
I got this show. It comes on Reels on DirecTV.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of the show is World Without End. Have you heard of it?
No.
Okay, it's about it's a made-up town back in the 1320s in England.
Just before the Black Death, you mean?
No.
Okay.
It's a...
Maybe that was
like a 1420s.
King
Queen fairy tale type story.
Uh-huh.
But it's pretty dramatic. Mm. And I watched the first two episodes, and it pretty much sums up what the Republican Party, to me, it's all about that particular time period with this war on women. It's crazy.
Take us back to a feudal time when workers knew their place and women knew their place and kids knew their place and everybody and the rich people knew their place, which was to lord over everybody else. Excellent point, Mike. Thanks a lot for the call and for making it. Ed in Culver City, California. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how are you? We've spoken several times before, and I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
And I've in the last half hour, you mentioned that are we that stupid or is political advertising that effective?
Right. And I think the answer to the question is the political advertising is that effective. There's a reason why you see all these drug ads on TV, and we're one of only two nations in the world, us and New Zealand, two nations in the world that allow this.
I have a point for you to consider.
Okay.
And that is, take a look around you wherever you go. And keep in mind this thought. At least 50% of the people around you are below average.
You and George Carlin, right? I've heard that routine. It doesn't mean that people are that stupid. I mean, there is a small... thanks for the call, Ed. Last night I was... we were at the TV studio. I was walking by they got all the various cable systems up there, and there was CNN, and they had on the Chyron, the lower third, the words printed on the screen. It said undecided voter, right? They were interviewing an undecided voter, and this guy was sitting there pontificating about his concerns as an undecided voter. And you know, in my mind, anybody who is an undecided voter at this point in time and knows enough about what's being said politically to be able to go on CNN or any other news network and talk about politics isn't really an undecided voter. They're just saying that to get on TV. Or they're just saying that to get into, you know, a focus group or something like that. Make a few bucks on the side. I realize it's a bad economy. Or they're really genuinely stupid. But if the guy was really genuinely stupid, I don't think that, you know, he'd be on TV. So I think that there's a myth of the undecided voter, and it's amazing. Brenda in Mineral Wells, Texas. Hey, Brenda, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you that after the debate where Romney accused President Obama of being invested in China, I heard the next day one of his surrogates clarify that, and she said that He has $50,000 to $100,000 in a retirement fund where when he was teaching, and he didn't directly invest that in China. Whoever invests retirement funds, and it's a small amount, and that's the only way he's invested in China. And I wanted that out there because Romney spends it like he's just like him. And
yeah.
People need to know that.
So this, President Obama has money in a retirement fund from when he was a professor of law. When he was teaching law. And that retirement fund, of course, is managed by a fund manager who has some investments in China. Makes perfect sense, Brenda. Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for the tip. I appreciate that. It's interesting to know. Tony in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Tony, what's on your mind?
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Sure.
After Romney made these comments a long time ago about the 47%, I was really upset with that and how another American can think that way about half the people that live here. And I kept thinking about it, and the more I thought about it, I looked at his background and his education and his money and his family life and all that stuff, and like, all that jazz. And whether he's a good guy or a bad guy, and I don't think he's a good guy, but I really feel that Mitt Romney and the people he was talking to actually believe the term working poor is an oxymoron, that those two things cannot exist together. Which actually makes them morons, but they don't get it. They just don't get it.
Well, there's, what was it, Sinclair Lewis or F. Scott Fitzgerald? I guess it was F. Scott Fitzgerald said, you know, the rich are not like you and me. Or maybe the cliche was different than that. You know, there's another cliche that they're just like us, only they have more money. I disagree. The very wealthy,
like
if you're born a millionaire, like George W. Bush was and like Mitt Romney was. If you're born a millionaire, you grow up in a very different world in this country than if you're born into the middle class, or if you're born into the working poor, or if you're born into the poor poor. It's a very different world. It's a world of private preparatory schools. It's a world of chauffeur-driven cars. It's a world of never having to interact with people who have very little. It's a world of not having to interact, not interacting with people who are minorities. It literally is a different world. And it's
totally out of touch.
It's a bubble. It's a bubble.
Yeah.
And I think Mitt Romney grew up in this bubble. I think he lives in this bubble. I think he keeps his kids in this bubble. And Tony, Shane tells me that you are going to receive a copy of Unequal Protection, How Corporations Became People and How You Can Fight Back by Tom Hartman. Autographed copy. We're going to send it to you. Brought to you by Stamps.com. So I'm putting you on hold here, Tony, so that Danielle can get your address information. We can send the book out to you. Thanks for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And this right-wing meme, oh, we caught Jim Moran's son encouraging voter fraud. Jim Moran's son has now resigned from his position on his dad's campaign. But this was a James O'Keefe. I finally looked it up. After hearing all these right-wingers, they're all hysterical about it. I'll bet Sean Hannity's playing it 24/7 on Fox. This guy is pushing him and pushing him and pushing him and saying, well, you know, these guys, they want to vote, but, you know, they're poor. They don't have any income. They don't have any money. What do you, you know, they don't have a utility bill. Well, okay, maybe you could create one or something. Wrong thing to say. Stupid thing to say. But, it's like O'Keefe keeps getting people to say things, but he didn't do anything. And I suppose, you know, in some worlds, saying things is a crime. Certainly it's a political crime. But what's really going on here is, you know, O'Keefe is one of these shills for the hard right, for the billionaires. And make no, you know, do not imagine this guy is, you know, living hand to mouth. And the billionaires take very good care of their own. And he's got this little gig going. You know, he took down Acorn, which never committed a crime. In fact, Acorn was busting people for submitting phony registrations to them. And, you know, there was enough Sturm und Drang made over at Fox News about this that they actually got, you know, the Republicans defunded ACORN, any money that was going to community action to help get people registered to vote. This is all about reducing the voter pool. So, Brian in Englewood, Colorado. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. It sounds like you looked it up in the meantime, but I just wanted to tell you about the O'Keefe thing. It's, you know, he's sending these guys in to joke around with people and get them to humor them, and then he turns it into voter fraud, and it's just ridiculous that people believe this crap.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, and it is entrapment, and you know you can call it whatever you want, but the fact of the matter is that Jim Moran's son should never have said, you know, I suppose you could phony up a utility bill, you know, I'm sure that he was willing to. I mean, what do you do? I mean, here's a legitimate question: somebody is a U.S. citizen and they don't have any income. You know, well, they should have some kind of idea. I mean, that should be the answer is, you know, sorry, that's just, and in fact, that's what he said afterwards in the tape is, you know, you need to look at the law, but you're right. It's sad. It's really sad. And these guys, you know, O'Keefe and these guys and Hannity and these others who are pushing this stuff are doing so because, well, you know, Hannity's got $200 million contract. He wants to make sure his taxes are low too. David in Dublin, Ohio. Hey, David, what's on your mind?
A couple things, Tom. First of all, I really enjoy your program. First time caller, so I was able to get through. Couple of things. First of all, the governor in this state prides himself so much on having balanced the budget, and we have a rainy day fund. Yes, he's balanced the budget on the back of local governments, and I think there is a tremendous number of school systems going for levies in November. So the middle class, the average person, has to pony up more money anyway, so I think that is such a sham for the governor to say, oh, I balanced the budget. Yeah, right, on the backs of people. That's my first point. Second point is, concerning all of these Republican candidates for senator coming out with the most horrendous comments about rape, I can't understand how most women could even think about voting for it, not only for them, but for the Republican Party, which stands for no abortion except to save the life of a mother. I worked at a psychiatric hospital for a number of years, and I saw a lot of damaged psyches. And the problem is that if a woman who's been a victim of this horrendous crime of rape or incest, if she wants to go through with having the baby, that's fine. But there are a lot of women who will look at that baby growing inside of her and think, I can't stand this, I can't deal with this. Right. And her mental health is at risk. Maybe not her physical health, but her mental health, which is just as important. So I just can't understand the people who would even think about voting.
It is a patriarchal, paternalistic, you know, father knows best worldview that was best left in the 1950s. David, thank you for the call. Daniel in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. Hey, Daniel, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm glad to hear you're feeling better. All my best wishes to Louise.
Thank you.
I was talking about your comment on, like, rich people, like, they're different and everything. I just want to say, like, Ronald Reagan didn't grow up rich, and look what he did. And then Jack Kennedy was rich, and then, you know, he was more in play with the middle-class people. But I wanted to bring a 2012 example because Mitt Romney, you know, out of all the Republicans, I think I'm not going to vote for him. I don't agree with what he's doing. But I really thought that he would start to hit fire because he went around talking about these trade agreements. And up until like a little bit
ago, he actually never talked about the trade agreements. What he talked about, and I've been saying for a long, long time, whichever party first starts taking on this whole concept of free trade is going to start winning elections. Romney has never talked about trade agreements. But Romney is supportive of the trade agreements. What he has said is that China is manipulating the value of their currency to make their goods cheaper here in the United States to encourage exports. And
right.
And that, by the way, is what President Obama has successfully sued them in the WTO three times now and won judgments, including tariffs. That's why there's still a tire industry in Ohio about that same issue. So Romney is running around complaining about it. Obama actually did something about it.
I'm in complete agreement with that. But just in terms of, like, he's like, generally speaking, these people, I want to make trade work for the United States, which I thought is effective talk right there, but it's just talk. But just in terms of, like, with, like, rich people and, like, Like we were talking about how like they're a certain way, then like middle class people are a certain way. Like Rick Santorum was a middle class person, and like what he says about the China issue was that I want to beat China, and I know that that's corporate code for just simply to get to a race to the bottom. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah. Let's drive down everybody's wages so that our workers can keep their jobs in the face of competition with somebody who makes $25 a month or whatever it may be. Daniel, excellent point. Thank you very much for the call, Chris. In Denver. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Long time, first time.
Thank you.
I'm calling to make 2 points. One regarding the voting. I came to this wonderful country during the Reagan presidency and administration, and I didn't know a lot of things that I know today, thanks to you and your program and others like you. And I remember going in to vote on the election day. I was confronted with a lot of names, a lot of names that I didn't know of because every county has different names and so forth. So I learned my lesson early on, which is to ask for a mail-in ballot, to always do a little bit of research, who are the different people at different levels, and who are the judges that we're supposed to retain or reject, right, and so forth.
Your point?
Second point, yeah, thank you. Second point I'd like to make is in regards to women reproduction rights and the right wing bringing in a lot of issues of faith and so forth.
Right.
And they want to transform righteousness by faith into righteousness by legislation, legislating morality, and treating women as if United States...
I don't even think, Chris, this is an attempt to legislate morality. I think this is an attempt to impose a paternalistic, patriarchal worldview on the United States. Chris, thank you for the call. I don't think this has anything to do with morality. I think it has to do with men and being in charge. I think it has to do with men controlling the lives of women. Very simple. It's misogyny. It's dressed up misogyny. It's dressed up hatred or fear of women on the part of men. It's very rare that you hear women talking about this. This is mostly men.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And being one, maybe it's easier to see. I don't know. But anyhow, 15 minutes past the hour. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very hemorrhophonically ugly, the good. Criminal justice experts. During a panel discussion yesterday at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City, criminal justice experts argued that the New York Police Department should have an inspector general to examine their conduct, the conduct of its officers, and its tactics. The suggestion comes in the wake of a variety of NYPD scandals, including widespread spying on Muslim Americans and the use of controversial stop and frisk tactics. One of the panelists, Faiza Patel from the Brennan Center for Justice, said that an inspector general would be an important first step in bringing some measure of transparency and accountability to the police. All across America, police forces have become above the law. We need to reel them back in and make them do what they are supposed to be doing and behave the way they are supposed to be behaving, that is, serving the people. The bad. Donald Trump. Yesterday, Donald Trump gave Americans more reasons to think he's a joke after announcing he would give $5 million to a charity of President Obama's choice if President Obama released his college application information and passport application information. As we all know, Trump is the celebrity endorser of the absurd birther movement in this country, but apparently Trump is unwilling to release his own information. When contacted by the Guardian newspaper and asked for Trump's college and passport records, Trump's worker bees refused to disclose the information, calling the request stupid and trying to be funny. Now that is the irony of all ironies. And the very, very ugly Republicans in Congress. In the last 2 years, the number of Americans who have become sick or even died from contaminated food has risen 44%. This roughly equals 48 million Americans getting sick or dying from tainted foods. And while these are huge numbers, Republicans in Congress want to defund laws that help curb foodborne illness outbreaks like salmonella. And because of Republican opposition and underfunding, the FDA is unable to put into place other reforms to protect the lives of Americans. Simply put, Republicans care more about playing politics and appeasing the interests of big agriculture than they do about the lives of the Americans they are supposed to be representing, and that is very, very ugly.
That's incredibly ugly. That's mind-bogglingly ugly.
Oh, I love these things. John, in Columbus, North Carolina. Is that Columbus or Columbia?
Columbus.
Ah, Columbus. Okay. What's up, John?
Hey, Tom. Good to talk to you. Here's something that kind of goes along with what you were talking about, except in a different time. The History Channel has a show on now called The Men Who Built America.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about Rockefeller and Carnegie and guys like that.
Right.
And they actually did a good job. They went into depth with Carnegie, and Carnegie brought in a man named Frick to run a steel mill in Pennsylvania. And what he did was he put the squeeze on the workers there, and the workers fought back by forming a union. So they brought in the Pinkerton men. What Frick wanted them to do was work 6 days a week, 12 hours a day in a steel mill in the summertime.
Right.
And it's just putting the squeeze on the working man. But to top it all off on this show, it's a pretty good show. But what they would do is intermittently they bring in guys like Donald Trump and Jack Welch and Steve Wynn to kind of comment on it. And that just totally makes you sick when they comment on it and give their 2 cents.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree, although I haven't watched the History Channel in years. I can't really comment on a History Channel TV show. Natalie in Lafayette, Alabama. Hey, Natalie, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to bring up something about all these folks who call, who are, supposedly aficionados of the Bible and all these religions. And being born here in the South, you're kind of steeped in religion, whether you want to be anyway. But there's a part in Genesis, number 2, chapter 2, number 7, and it basically says you're not a living soul until you breathe air into your nostrils.
Well, this was the original position of the Catholic Church for a lot of years, for probably well over a millennia, which was that, because God breathed life into Adam, made Adam out of clay and blew air into him, and suddenly he was alive.
Right, it refers to that.
Right. And so you're not alive until you draw your first breath after birth. And then they changed that to quickening, and now they're changing it to moment of sperm meets egg. It's varied. Religions evolve. Science evolves.
I would recommend.
I'm not here to be an arbiter of anybody's religion.
Concern
is when their religion starts being made into law, then I have a concern.
Yeah, I just try to know what they're talking about because then I can bring up a point.
Yeah, very, very well done. Natalie, thank you.
But I would recommend to all our liberal and progressive friends, if you just read Genesis 1 through 4 or 5,
right.
It's a great story of how the earth evolved, and if you read it from beginning to end, it's almost evolutionary.
Well, arguably, yes.
The way the earth became into made, and then there was light, and then there were whales, and then there were people. It's very interesting.
And thank you, Natalie. Thank you very much for the call. And in fact, if you look at the creation stories of virtually any of the world's great religions or of any people, every tribe on earth, there's all kinds of small indigenous tribes out there. They all have creation stories. And they all start with their tribe is the first tribe that the first human was one of us. Now, think about this for a minute. Every tribe on earth, every religion on earth says that the first human was one of our religion or one of our race. Adam is the word for first human, which raises the question. Adam and Eve had 2 sons, Cain and Abel. Cain killed Abel. And what did he do? Think about it for a minute. Just go back and read the Bible. What did he do? He left. Now, Cain killed Abel. He left and went to a nearby village and married a woman there. Adam and Eve were the first people? No, they were the first people of that tribe. Don't you get it? These are creation stories that are totally ethnocentric, that are totally, this is about us. The earth was created on the back of the great turtle. The world came out of the lotus blossom, and the first human, and every single one of them has a story which is about their tribe, our tribe. And that's an absolutely natural and normal thing. But for us to say we're going to make laws based on a Bronze Age book about one particular tribe's creation and rules for life is crazy.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And I would add, it's the exact same thing that the Taliban is trying to do in Pakistan and Afghanistan. Say, yes, we're going to make laws for the government that are the same as this book. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio and Television Program, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations all across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio and every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as TV on both Dish Network, DirecTV, and cable systems nationwide by Free Speech TV. On the line with us, Secretary Richard Danzig, the U.S. Secretary of the Navy under President Bill Clinton, an advisor to the President Barack Obama's campaign, and chairman of the Center for a New American Security. Secretary Danzig, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Two things immediately come to mind. The first is the former Secretary of State in the Bush administration, Colin Powell, has come out and endorsed the president, has endorsed President Obama, and not only that, has taken a swipe at Mitt Romney on his foreign policy views. And since you were the Secretary of the Navy, I'm curious your take on that. And I also then want to get into, you know, some of this naval part of the debate the other night. But first, your thoughts on Mr. Powell.
Well, it's really wonderful to see General Powell take a step which obviously is difficult for him because of his Republican background. But I think you see that he waited till the third debate was over and he'd really examined all the evidence and the whole range of views. And he just, in a typically balanced way, came out very decisively saying that, in his view, President Obama really had the qualities of commander-in-chief. And he did that not only because of what's been said in this campaign, but also in looking back at the record the president has achieved, really, in giving us a remarkable amount of peace and security in these last 4 years. That tends to get lost in the noise and the arguments over particular places like Libya. So I think it's a very strong endorsement. And then, as you mentioned, en route, he also had some quite negative things to say, not only about Governor Romney's views, but also about the return of so many people who are ultra-conservative in the George W. Bush administration, gave us the war in Iraq and other policy misadventures. These people now have such a strong influence over Governor Romney that I think it plainly made General Powell uncomfortable. So I think it's quite a telling endorsement, quite significant.
Well, and I think they did a lot of damage to his reputation, frankly. You know, he's still having to struggle with that. The ships battle, as it were, that, you know, Governor Romney in the last debate started out by saying our Navy has fewer ships than it did in 1916. I guess that would be pre-World War I or as we were ramping up for it or whatever. And first of all, it's not a factual statement. We actually had fewer ships under the Bush administration than we have now. But secondly, and President Obama, I think it was one of the more humorous points of the night, you know, now we have these things called aircraft carriers, and you can land airplanes on them. And, you know, it's not, you don't measure the quality of your Navy and the number of ships. But I think that there was a subtext to what Governor Romney was saying, which was, to the people in, particularly in Virginia, North Carolina, the states where they build ships or where they have ports, which was, you know, we're going to get you some more government jobs here. We don't talk about stimulating the economy by spending government money, but we're going to do that through the military budget. And I thought, frankly, President Obama should have preceded his rebuttal to Governor Romney by saying, as the good people of Virginia well know, we have aircraft carriers, because the Republicans this day are trying to spin this as Obama wants to cut the Navy. What's the real deal here?
Well, you captured several key points right off. The Governor Romney's assertion is just, as you say, factually wrong. And the fact that the smallest Navy we've ever had came under George W. Bush, what we've had since 1917, and not under President Obama, it just reflects the fact that while there's been a lot of strong rhetoric from Republicans about building up the Navy and how important national defense is, the reality is they let it decline, and the reality is that it's President Obama who's increased the size of the Navy and who's presented budgets that will continue to raise the size of the Navy up beyond 300 ships. The execution of the Navy budget also, in terms of efficiency and avoiding waste, is just so much more impressive than it was under the Bush regime. So if you want the reality and not the rhetoric, I think you have to go to the Democratic side. Then there's also just the point about the underlying worldview that's suggested by Governor Romney's approach. It's a kind of, I feel as though Etch-a-Sketch has been replaced by paint by numbers. Mm-hmm. We're going to, well, we need this number, we need 4% spending, et cetera. Right. But again, it's all rhetoric. He said he would raise defense spending to 4%, but when his key advisor, Dov Zakheim, who had been controller in the Pentagon under George W. Bush, was asked to defend this at a breakfast with, or a meeting with Pentagon reporters, he said, well, we couldn't really achieve that during the first term, and maybe not even by the end of the first term. So I think for people in Virginia and throughout the country, there is enough good sense to realize, let's look at the record and the reality and not be moved simply by this rhetoric. And the reality is that amongst the two parties and amongst the two candidates, President Obama, who really is delivering a bigger Navy and a stronger one.
And to that point, is it not the case, and please contradict me if I'm wrong on this, that in all probability, if we're going to be engaged in future conflicts with state actors as opposed to bin Laden type individual crazies or small groups, that engagement is probably going to take the form of their infiltrating our computer systems and shutting down our cities, or that cyber warfare is frankly a huge risk right now, and that the kind of world war, the kind of activity where you need a lot of ships, is perhaps reducing. And also, we use a lot of ships to protect our shipping lanes to bring oil from the Middle East, something that we all pay for with our tax dollars, but benefits the big oil companies. They keep all the profit. They don't pay for the Navy. And as we become more and more energy independent, there's going to be less and less need to protect those shipping lanes. Or am I completely off base here?
Well, I think you're on base when you talk about the cyber risks and the kinds of modern challenges that we confront. And anybody who built our armed forces by counting the number of ships or airplanes and ignoring the variables that you're talking about would be very sadly mistaken. And indeed, one of the frustrations we've had in recent time is that Congress has resisted legislation that the president has been proposing to begin to give us more cyber protection.
Yeah. I mean, Saudi Arabia just got hit, it looks like, by Iran.
Exactly right. Having said, and so did our banks before that, and there's right. just a lot more focus in that area. Having said that, though, my own view is that the future is really unpredictable. We're not any longer fighting a monolithic opponent, the Soviet Union, that was slow and ponderous in its development. And we're in a world where not only there are a great variety of threats and challenges, but also a rapid pace of technology change. And in that world, I don't think any of us should say, well, the battle of the future is going to be one that involves battleships, or one that's going to involve cyber, or one that's going to involve something else. I think national security is like putting money in the bank. You don't necessarily know how you're going to spend it, but you know that it's a good thing to have it there. You want to, I think, have a broad range of capabilities, which includes robust naval ships and the capability to deliver traditional firepower, and at the same time, a balance of that with some of the newer kinds of resources you're mentioning. And I think our present budgets achieve it. I think the president well understands that. I think people who let it get too far out of balance in one direction or another are at risk, because our conceptions of the future changed so rapidly. I don't think you and I would have been talking about cyber 15 years ago, but that's how long it takes to develop these capabilities.
Yeah, and they're substantial. Secretary Richard Danzig, the former U.S. Secretary of the Navy under President Bill Clinton. Sir, thanks for dropping by today.
A pleasure. Good luck to you, and remember that encourage people to get out there to vote.
There you go. Yes.
Thanks a lot.
Indeed.
Take care.
Thank you very much, sir. It's been a very enlightening conversation with Secretary Danzig. Remarkable. Let's see here. Lydia in Tehachapi, California. How do you say your city?
Tehachapi.
Tehachapi. Okay. Lydia, what's up?
I had a couple of points on the International Observer with Greg Abbott saying that he was going to kick those observers out. Says he made a point of saying state law prohibits. But this is a federal election, and federal law supersedes state law.
Right, the supremacy clause.
And he can't do that.
Right.
Secondly, international delegates merely need to get a candidate's credential or a credential as an observer from an authorized organization like the League of Women Voters,
mm-hmm.
and there's absolutely nothing he can do about their presence there.
So this is just Texas huffing and puffing.
I think is really interesting is why is he afraid to have them there? And that's just as much of a concern. The second thing I wanted to mention, that you have a collection of information that you've been talking about in terms of voter registration violation of the law and electioneering. And in today's local paper, the entire top GOP staff representatives elected and candidates stood in front of the building where the Board of Elections is housed to have a meeting endorsing a particular candidate.
Remarkable. Lydia, we're out of time. Thank you for calling and sharing that with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back in just a moment, 45 minutes past the hour, with more of your calls, my thoughts, and the news of the day.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Indeed, you tell them, Leonard. Speaking of Leonard, there's Leonard in La Mesa, California. Welcome to the program.
Yes, I think it's okay for employers, as far as I can tell, nobody seems to complain about it, that they replace workers with robots and computers.
Yes, that's okay.
I assume they do it sometimes just to save on labor cost and for no other reason.
Sure. We've been doing this. I mean, this is the story of the Industrial Revolution. We've been doing this for 200 years.
Yeah, it's been going on for hundreds of years. So they do it to save on labor costs. So why isn't it also okay for them to replace workers with cheap foreign labor since the economic consequences are the same?
Well, the economic consequences are not entirely the same. When you outsource work to a poor, low-wage country, not only are you losing that manufacturing, but those low-wage countries are not just low-wage countries. They're low-regulation countries. They're, you know, so the industries are able to pollute without, you know, cost. They're able to, and you know, do things that are harmful to that country, harmful, frankly, to the entire planet. China has a horrible pollution problem right now. They've got an exploding rates of cancer. They've got, you know, we did a story on South African gold mine last night where, this is a city, or I'm sorry, it's a Nigerian. This is a city with very few children because they all got lead poisoning. Because, you know, when work is done in countries where there are not labor standards and environmental standards, it's very profitable for transnational corporations. It is destructive to human beings and the planet. And the extent to which, and thanks, Leonard, for the call, the extent to which we're going to look at all of us together, we should really be looking at all of us together and saying, you know, this outsourcing stuff, this is not a good idea. Let indigenous companies, let China start companies to make things in local communities to meet the needs of local communities, and let's continue making things in the United States to meet the needs of the United States and hold those companies accountable. Very, very simple. Dennis in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Dennis, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Regular listener.
Thank you.
This week's issue of Newsweek magazine, front page, front cover, David Stockman rips Romney.
Oh, that's where that quote came from. I was wondering.
Yes, and he goes on to say he was a master financial speculator
yes.
who bought, sold, flipped, and stripped businesses. He did not build anything the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, and it's true. It's true. And Romney's going to try and say, well, you know, we did put some money into Staples and, you know, Home Depot or whatever. And my response to that would be, yeah, and that's a really good job, you know, working at Staples. I mean, that's that, you know, you're going to raise a family that way. It's just and how many small local office supply stores and stationery stores that used to be good jobs and used to be family owned businesses and used to support the American middle class did Staples put out of business? I don't see any. Thank you for the call, Dennis. I don't see any way that Mitt Romney can make a case that his business career should be a qualification for president of the United States, or that we should even be saying, you know, we need more of this kind of stuff. It seems crazy to me. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Well, I also wanted to add the new this magazine, The Nation. Its front cover is very interesting. I know you covered this a few weeks ago. I don't understand why the story about Mitt Romney's involvement in the auto bailout and how much money he and his wife made off of that, why that is not, you know, something that is, along with his 47% comment, getting too much traction in, you know, say CNN or NPR yeah. or PBS or any of the other outlets.
I think the reason why, John, is because they want the race to be a dead heat. And if they bring out all this information about Mitt Romney, it's going to crash him in the polls, and then they won't get right. so many advertising dollars.
Well, you know, maybe you're right, but that's pretty pathetic. That's the state of our media.
Yeah, it is. And you can track it back to 1987 when Ronald Reagan said, okay, you know, for 50 years now, we've had this law in the books that says if you want to. Yeah, exactly. This says if you want to use the public airwaves, then, you know, we will give you the use of the public airwaves for free. You don't have to pay us.
Right.
But what you do have to do is you have to give us back, you know, an hour of time a day. You have to give us back real news. And Reagan blew that up.
Can I make one more quick comment? Yeah. Also, I was just astounded that these young people, I just came from food shopping at a co-op, a very left-leaning neighborhood by the University of Minnesota, and I said, you kids need to read this, you know? And, you know, when I was young, everybody had a political opinion. I mean, I couldn't believe it, that they weren't interested in this story.
Yeah, it's, well,
unengaged.
It's because,
you know,
John, thank you for the call. It's because they don't remember a time in America when people actually had jobs. I mean, the kind of jobs that you could raise a family and become part of the middle class. David in Farmington, Michigan, we got a minute to the end of the show. David, it's yours.
I'll be as fast as I can. This is about unemployment and the bum rap that Obama's been taking on it. Everybody's aware of the problem with the housing industry, but what they're not aware of is the extent of the impact this has. In 2005, over 2 million homes were started, but in last year, 3 years, it's only averaged 580,000 homes. This is the lowest number in almost 50 years.
Right, it is picking up right now.
1.5 million start in housing starts, which is $500 billion a year from our economy.
Right.
That's also 4 million jobs, which is a very, very conservative estimate.
Right, and when Nancy Pelosi put together, and thanks for the call, David, when Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats in the House of Representatives put together legislation that would help, that legitimately would help homeowners by, you know, basically helping pay down the principal on underwater mortgages, the Republicans in the Senate filibustered it. Insane. Coming up tomorrow on the Tom Hartman program, it's Brunch with Bernie. America's Senator Bernie Sanders will be here talking about all the important issues of the week. Get your questions ready. He'll be taking your calls, too. Plus, anything goes on Town Hall Friday. What do you want to sound off about? The best of the rest of the news, your thoughts, my thoughts, the news of the day. Right here on the Tom Hartman program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. And I don't mean just voting. There's a whole lot more than voting. Get out there, get active, occupy something. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.